and welcome to the Clever Tax Podcast, Creating Useful People. I'm Jodie Cook, and today I'm joined by Jessica Wheeler. Jessica is the principal of the prestigious and world-leading Elmhurst Ballet School, a position she's held since 2010 when she was just 32. Under Jessica's leadership, the school has continued to impress Ofsted, achieved record exam results, and even had a royal visit. In 2014, the Duchess of Cornwall visited Elmhurst to take a tour and watch the students perform. Jessica has been described by Ofsted as a highly effective leader. She's created a set of videos for Teachers TV, and she's a team inspector for other independent schools. Private Eye once called Jessica a hench woman, which is perhaps quite fitting for where I first met Jessica, which was at the gym, where we were both training to be hench women. So, Jessica, a huge welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Jessica, I've read that you started dancing from a very young age. Can you tell me more about the role of dance in your childhood?
Yeah, of course. So really, it was my wonderful parents I had a sister who were really close in age, and I think that they wanted a class for us to go to that we could enjoy. They're quite creative people and they're quite musical. My dad particularly is very musical, and I think they just wanted us to go somewhere where we had great enjoyment but also had some discipline. So they sent us off to a ballet class together, and I think I was about two when I did my first ballet class, and most of that was good toes and naughty toes and galloping around the room, I guess. But actually, my sister and I both fell in love with dance and carried on until university age. My sister carried on until she was in uni, and then I carried on into my training and career. But I think dance, since the age of two, basically was a thread throughout everything. So alongside school, so I always went to a day school, but actually danced every night of the week and at weekends as much as I possibly could, because I just loved it. In the 80s, I found disco and danced at competitions with Len Goodman and did some crazy disco things, which was very fascinating and just brilliant at the time in that era. And then when I was 11, I discovered contemporary dance, which was really early in those days. I guess it would have been in the 90s. And then I fell in love with contemporary dance. I always kept up with my ballet, but pursued contemporary dance further into my career.
Did you ever realise that you could turn what you were doing into a career of some sort?
Well, I think probably not in the very early stages, although I had quite a lot of people around me, like lots of dance teachers where I looked up to and thought, you just something about them and their passion for what they did made me think I could become a dance teacher in the future. And I probably saw that at quite a young age. I had my very first dance teacher who I was completely in awe of was a lady called Denise, and she was my disco teacher, and she ran her own dance school, and it was out of like a village hall or something in Kent, I think, at the time. And she was just so amazing in every way, so organized, so passionate, just infused the students. And then every kind of dance teacher I've met along the way, where we've moved, I moved a lot as a child, where we moved to Suffolk, I then met a wonderful teacher called Caroline Mummery, who was just, again, passionate and enthusiastic and creative and just wanted students to go on and do good things. And they are the people really that I kind of admired, I suppose.
So when you were younger, apart from dancing, did you have any other hobbies?
Well, I spent most of my time dancing. I didn't really have time for much else, to be honest, which in some ways, looking back, is a bit of a shame, but not really either. I think friends of mine would be out at the cinema, and I think more I felt that I was missing out on some social opportunities, really, rather than missing out on doing another hobby. I would have loved to have learned a musical instrument, and for my children, I'd really like them to learn to read music, but I think that's a really lovely life skill to have. But yeah, I don't feel like I missed out because I dance so much.
And so if the purpose of dancing from a very young age was for you and your sister to do something fun together, did it work? Like, are you and your sister like still really close? Did it succeed in that?
Oh yeah, we're still really close. And because when we moved to Suffolk, we were living in the countryside. When we first learned to drive, so my mum was like a taxi, bless her. My parents were amazing, and they just used to taxi us all over the countryside to all the various classes because we weren't living in the town then. As soon as we passed our driving test, we used to drive to classes together. So those journeys could be sort of 45 minutes each way. We'd have music blasting, we'd be singing. We've got all the, even now at sort of 40 odd years of age, the pair of us, we've got our songs that we have had in the car, R. Kelly being one of them, and others that we just know are our kind of on the way to dance songs. So yeah, I mean, it's been a bond for us, really has been a bond for us, and I think that's been a really lovely thing for us growing up.
So apart from the ability to dance, did you get a sense of other things that dance was teaching you?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I try to bring to my role at school at Elmhurst is around in transferable skills, because probably didn't quite realise it at the time until I was in sixth form, maybe, where I was like, okay, all of the skills that I'm learning in my classes, like working with others, teamwork, cooperation, being good with people, being open to ideas, bringing ideas, being creative, all of those things you can transfer to any setting. And I think there are some dancers who have kind of made career transitions in their lives who are phenomenal practitioners in a very different setting, but they're bringing all of those skills to bear, which is amazing.
It feels like confidence would be such a big one as well.
Absolutely. Confidence is huge, actually. I think because you're having to present yourself physically in front of audiences and people, intimate and much bigger venues, then of course confidence plays a big role. And it's interesting as well, because I think confidence physically is very different to confidence verbally. And one of my big learning points was when I was dancing for Transitions Dance Company, and we were asked by a choreographer to speak on stage for the first time, and it was just horrifying. Everyone was so frightened. But actually, it was a brilliant learning curve, because it meant that we had to overcome that fear of speaking as well in public, and that was a really helpful learning point.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, you probably, in your role now, I guess you do a lot of public speaking.
Yeah, I have to, and I think you sort of learn to adapt with that. And actually, I really enjoy addressing big audiences and just trying to be as natural and humanistic and normal, I think, as you can be, and personable, because I think that's when you kind of get the best relationship going with people.
Tell me about moving around a lot as a child.
So yeah, my dad was an electrical engineer, and he worked all over the place, basically. So I was born in Shoreham. We then moved to Kent. We then moved to Belgium for about close to 3 years. When I was about five, we moved back, and then we moved to Suffolk. So I think in total, I probably went to about seven different schools, which was a lot. And it was an amazing opportunity as well as challenging. So the opportunities were that we went to an international school when we were in Belgium, and we learned about different cultures and met different people from lots of different backgrounds. We got very versed in being adaptable to change, which is a great skill to have. But I think some of the downsides were kind of always feeling like the new girl, and that's quite hard, I think, especially in sort of your teenage years, I think, when you're feeling quite self-conscious anyway.
How did you get over that?
I think just trying to, well, my parents and sister are great support, and I think because we all moved together, we had to be a bit of a unit to support each other in those periods of time. And then I think the dance actually helped because of confidence, so it meant that you could kind of overcome some of those things, and then just kind of forming friendships where you felt that you could trust people. And I think trust comes into play a lot, because there were people that you'd come into contact with who almost wanted to be friends with the new girl because it was novel, but they weren't really authentically interested, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think it's finding those people that are true to themselves, and therefore they're true to you.
So in your international school in Belgium, where did all the other students come from?
Oh, all over. So we had America, Sweden, Egypt, the UK, Ukraine, literally all over. And it was a tiny, tiny school. So there were only about 30 of us in the school. And it was a really kind of family community, which was lovely, which meant that lessons were very varied because they were cross age groups. So again, one of my very early experiences working in it, I think in my class there are about five students. And so I was one of the eldest. So the teacher used to get me to help do a lot of the kind of almost like a teaching assistant to help with the younger children. And I think they were some of my very early experiences of wanting to help others.
So that was when you were about five until you were about eight. So when you were at that school, did you have a sense of what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Yeah, I guess kind of looking back, it's quite funny because my sister and I were always putting on shows for anyone who was willing to watch. So we used to make tickets using my mum's Singer sewing machine, perforate the tickets and sell them to my mum's mum and dad's friends. And so we were always putting on performances. So I think from a young age, I always knew I wanted to go into some kind of performance arena.
Yeah, I love that.
So, I know.
So you managed to sell a lot of tickets then. I bet your mum's friends loved her, that they came around.
Get charged.
Oh, that's awesome. So you maybe knew it might involve dance, but you knew it would involve performances and kind of tickets and arenas and that kind of vibe.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we were always, we just loved creating a show and then selling it and then performing it. It was like a whole process, really.
So did that all come from the dance side of things? Or were there other factors that influenced your love of this whole kind of scene?
Sort of going back in my family history, there's a lot of musicians and my mum's an artist. So I think there's always been that creative kind of input. My dad's always played in a blues band very actively since about the age of 18. And he's sort of been in various bands. He still gigs to this day. So there's always been a sense of loving and appreciating music and the arts. And so even from a young age, I remember when there was Live Aid, for example, a really silly example, but if Live Aid was on, it would be a big event in our house and we'd get snacks and we'd make a big thing of watching it. And Dad and Mum used to take us to many concerts. So we've seen Elton John and Tina Turner and some of those big greats as we were growing up, Eric Clapton. And I think that whole appreciation of seeing live performance was definitely there.
Who were your role models when you were growing up?
Oh, I had so many. I think my parents really played a massive role in all of my kind of being now. So basically, they instilled in me that you have to work really hard to achieve. And I think they're living proof of that, because they came from great backgrounds, but my dad essentially didn't brilliantly get on with school. And so he ended up studying when my sister was tiny and I wasn't even born, and he was going through his HND to become an engineer. And then he became really successful in a really niche area of engineering, and then he created his own business and he's been really successful. It's been all through his own kind of personal endeavor and hard work. And then my mum, similarly, she runs her own business. She's an artist of fine china. She hand paints fine china. And again, she ran a household, nurtured and loved us as kids, but also ran a business and has followed her passion because she's committed to it and loves it. So there's a lot of themes that run through both of their journeys that have impacted on my how I view things and how I view life. And then more professionally, obviously the dance teachers that I've mentioned, but I came into contact when I was about 15, a very famous choreographer now called Wayne McGregor, who was just hugely inspirational and continues to be a massive influence on my life now. He's probably the most clever person I've ever met. He's just ingenious. He's creative. He's got a business mind. And I've watched his career go from brilliant beginnings through to like what he's doing now. He's kind of conquering the world in terms of dance in the sector, and I'm so immensely proud of him.
When you were growing up, did you have a sense then of what your parents were doing at the time?
Definitely, because I think they were, some of the things that they would say to us is, very much you make your own luck. And our dad had to work away quite a bit, and it was all about us understanding that the reason he was working away was to make sure that we had a great family home and were able to do great things like the dance classes and things. So we understood why they were working hard and why they were following what they were doing, because it was all for the greater good of our family.
So if you look at your kind of definition of success and what it is now and what it was then, have you kind of noticed a change in how you view that?
Definitely. So I think there's similarities and there's differences. So I think when I was younger, I would be really impressed with big houses and flash things, I guess, sort of quite materialistic stuff. Although my parents aren't like that and they're not materialistic at all. But I think looking at celebrities and all of that kind of world, I think it's easy to be quite enticed. But as I've grown older, I've really come to realise that success actually comes in all different guises. And it's not about money and fame. It's actually about the little things as well as some of the bigger things. So for me, success can be the fact that I've been working with Aria, my three-year-old, to get her to say please and thank you so much more than she was, and being less demanding. And actually, at the end of the day, she's been brilliant and has said please and thank yous all day, every day. And it's been brilliant. And for me, that's a success. Versus another success might be the fact that at Elmhurst, we get all of our kids get fantastic jobs and they're doing brilliantly. So I think it's just about appreciating some of the smaller things in life as being successes, as well as some of those big wins. And it's not all about money.
So Ari is three, and then Avery is what?
21 months. Yeah, he's one. So nearly two in October.
So is there anything that you were kind of taught how you were brought up that you're passing on to them and how you're bringing them up?
Definitely. It's quite scary. I can hear my parents when I talk to the kids. So like Aria was saying, what, mummy? And I'm like, it's not what, it's pardon. And just little things that you can hear your parents in your head going, I'm turning into my parents. But yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things at the moment with being so little is all about manners, and manners don't cost anything, and it makes you nicer to be around and all of those things. But I think it's also about what they want to do. So a lot of parents at school and other people ask me, has Aria had her first ballet class and things? And she's had some dance classes at school, but I also really want her to find her passion and what that might be. And I don't want me to kind of go, because I've come from such a dance background, I don't want her to feel like that's the expectation on her. But actually, if she finds it, and she does keep coming home with dance certificates, I'm like, really? But actually, if she finds that naturally, then great. But I don't want to be somebody that kind of superimposes it on her, or Avery for that matter. I mean, they're both very physical, they both love to move, love music, but ultimately I think they need to, with the guidance obviously, but I'd like them to try lots of different things.
Yeah, because I guess that's hard, because on one hand you can want them to do what they want to do, but then when are they ever going to think, oh, I know, I want to do a cricket class?
Yeah. No, exactly. They've got to try lots of things, haven't they, to sort of, find out what it is they want to do. So Ari's been to see, she came to see the school show this year, and she just loved it, bless her. She was just wowed by the students, which was lovely. Yeah. And they're both really sporty. Ari likes gymnastics. So I think you're right. You've got to open their minds to lots of different opportunities, and then they'll find their way.
I remember when I was little, me and my little sister, quite a similar story actually, we both went to dance classes together, to ballet dance, and I always remember my parents being very like, if you're going to do this, you're going to do this properly, or you're not going to do it at all.
That's similar to the same. So I think I'd be the same. So my parents, one of the things they did definitely instill in me is about commitment. So if we signed up for a term, we had to see the term through, even if we hated it, because that's what we committed to. And we'd have that conversation early on in the process. It wasn't like a surprise. You know, if we're signing up and we're paying £80 for this term, then you will see the £80 through, whether you like it, term through, whether you like it or not. And then we can review it and we can think again. But yeah, definitely around commitment. And I think I'll be exactly the same.
All or nothing, either do it or watch TV.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So what were you like at school?
Oh, well, I think I was a bit chatty, actually. I think that I liked to have, I was actually talking to my parents about this earlier, and I think the teachers that I chimed with and now remember the best are those that gave us some level of independence and autonomy within a sort of safe framework. So where you felt that you had a say in what you were doing, which I found lessons where it was a lot more didactic and prescriptive and yes and no answers. So the more maths and sciences, they just didn't sit very well with me. But lessons where like art or design or English, where I felt I could explore something on my own that I could lead on, I felt a lot more inspired and engaged in, I think. I had a big set of friends. I always was very sociable at school and loved the social aspect of school. It's one of the favourite bits, really, was making friends and being part of a friendship group.
What was the timings of when you moved schools?
I had a bit of an interesting time. So I left Kent when I was, I think I'd have been 11. And we came to some, we moved to Suffolk when I was 10 or 11. And I had to go, I was already in high school in Kent, but I had to go to middle school when I came to Suffolk because the system was different. So it felt like I went back a year because I was going then to a school where I was the eldest, where I'd just started secondary school in Kent. So it was all a bit odd. I did a year in the middle school and then moved to high school to join my sister at the local high school. And that was, it was hard. I think that year at middle school was really hard because I was the new girl. I had all those challenges at that age, which are difficult, I think, when you're growing up. But I soon found my way. And I think the high school, changing to high school, was better for me because it was an environment that I'd already got used to, having been in Kent, really.
And then joining the school that your sister was already at, did that make it easier as well?
Definitely, because I kind of, she helped me learn the ropes a lot quicker. I'd already got loads of kind of to download from her for the year that she was there before she started. She was only in the year above me, so that was really nice. It was good to be together.
And so the teachers that ran the lessons and let you have autonomy and created a sense of independence, have you got any, are there any specific examples that stand out to you?
Yeah, I think, well, it was the ones that could allow us to be the most enterprising, really. So it was often examples would be where a teacher would set us a project and we would be able to work in groups. So it's quite collaborative learning. And we would be asked to devise a project. So one project was that we had to make our own piece of clothing and we had to research what item of clothing we wanted to make. We had to design it, then we had to make it. And seeing that project through to realisation was fantastic. Another example was our home economics teacher was amazing and she used to let us go into her room when it was raining, bless her. So we didn't have to be out at break time. But there again, we set up our own kind of tuck shop. We used to bake things and sell them. And so there was this real sense that we were having some input into what we were doing rather than just being told, which I've never been very responsive to.
So has that shaped how you run Elmhurst now?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really collaborative in my leadership style, possibly too collaborative at times. I really like to invite students, staff and parents to be involved in the school's development, because I do think by coming together and talking about how the school could be even better, I mean, it's an amazing school already, but I'm not one to sit on my laurels, so we need to continually progress forward. And I think it's about involving everyone in that process, because it makes everyone feel involved and feel like they've got a say, whereas if it's just me coming and going, I know everything and I know what I'm doing and all the rest of it, then actually people are going to feel disenfranchised and not part of a community. And I think maybe the fact that I moved around so much, I do have a thirst for belonging and a kind of need for a sense of community. So I think that makes me kind of want to pull everyone closer to me to take the school forward.
Are there any like words or phrases that you channel when maybe things aren't going so well?
One that my mum is a massive ambassador of is jump and the net will appear. I use that and think about that a lot when things are going a bit kind of haywire or challenging. And there have been really challenging times professionally, you know, and in life. And I think that it's just knowing that everything, and the other one is everything passes. So when you're in a moment that's really heightened stress, is knowing that in a day, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, a year, it will have passed and it will all be okay again.
I love that. Jump and the net will appear. I've not heard that before, but yeah, that's awesome.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. So on your parents as well, is there anything else that they've really taught you that you know has contributed to who you are today?
Yeah, I think working hard, be committed, you make your own luck and do what you enjoy are really kind of the essence of how they have, well, what they've instilled in me and my sister. And I think that for me, finding something that I really enjoy, I mean, I am so integrally part of the school because I just love it so much, and it's such an amazing place to be. The students are just brilliant young people to work with. The staff are enthusiastic and passionate about what they do. What is there not to like? And it's it's just, I think it's marrying all those things together. And I think when you have that from your parents, where you kind of have that instilled in you that you have to be committed, you have to work hard and doing what you're enjoying, then I think it all does come together.
I think following your journey from even from the age of two, when you first went to your first dance lesson and how everything's kind of played out, it's a journey that, like, that step has led to that step, which led to that step. And it all kind of seems to make a really nice sense at the same time.
It definitely does. I mean, there are a few chops and changes, but actually you're right, when you kind of look back, there's a core thread. And what's really funny and makes me giggle, and I've still got it, is my national record of achievement that they don't do anymore, I don't think, but we used to have to write one at 16 where you wrote a statement of intent, really, kind of, this is what I've done at school and this is what I plan on doing in the future. And my record of achievement says that I plan to have a performance career, and then I'd like to take back into the community my learning from my performance career into schools and to become a teacher and work with young people.
Oh, wow. And
I know, it's just bizarre. It's actually written my future, well, that I wrote it when I was 16. So it's kind of strange. I kind of must have had in my head that that was the course that I wanted to go down. I hadn't quite anticipated cutting my performance career so short, so quickly. But actually, I've had such a blessed career. I can't complain at all.
Why was your performance career cut short?
Because I had a nasty injury when I was dancing full time. I was injured quite badly, and it took me a long time to recover. And I basically decided I wanted to teach because I was struggling with the recovery and wanted to earn money and survive and pursue other things. And so I went into teaching in challenging London secondary schools, which was the best thing I ever did.
So the kind of time between having the injury and going straight into teaching, like how long was there in between those two parts?
Probably about a year where I was umming and ahhing and not really know what I wanted to do. I knew the injury was bad and I knew that it was going to take some time to recover. And I also knew I wanted to sustain a life in London and I didn't want to rely on my parents to do that. So I knew what I had to work. And I'd always loved teaching. I mean, I used to run the dance school at school, a club at school. So I always bossing people around from a young age. But yeah, so I think it was always a bit of a natural instinct anyway. And I'd always loved teaching when we toured. So that was kind of a natural pathway, really.
So in your journey, has there ever been a stage where it could have gone completely different? Like you could have just picked a whole different like route to go down?
I think the only other route that I would have pursued would have been down the art route, really, because it was either going to be art, design or dance. And I think I'm a secret interior designer inside, which is something I still keep saying that I will pursue beyond my current career or alongside it, who knows. But I love design. I love property and development and looking at houses and things. So that's always been a passion of mine.
So if you grew up in a house with... So your dad was a electrical engineer who became very successful and your mum was an artist. What does your sister do now?
So she's a senior. She's kind of a strategist for Macmillan Cancer Support and she works in London and has a brilliant career there. And she essentially advises and works with the directors at Macmillan on their charity's strategy, which is fascinating.
How did the family dynamics work when you were younger? Like you said that you were bossy. So was everyone bossy or were you the bossy one? Or like how did that work?
I think I probably was the bossy one and I had to be put back in my box quite a bit, I think. And then I think I've really mellowed as I've got older. And I think I was a bit of a madam, really, for quite a bit of my childhood. And then I think things really calmed down for me sort of probably when I was training so hard, when I was at Trinity Laban, things calmed down, I mellowed, and I definitely mellowed. And actually it's interesting because my sister, who was a lot more placid when we were younger and I was always quite fiery, we've almost reversed roles a little bit because she's very good at being very honest and saying exactly what she thinks. And I'm more, I just want a nice, light and easy, quiet life. Thanks. I won't, you know, upset the apple cart. So I think I have so much challenge at work from time to time that actually outside of work, I just want everything to be nice and plain sailing.
So at Elmhurst then, and also maybe with Aria, like if you had a sense that someone else was turning into a kind of little madam like the one you were when you were younger, how would you stop that?
I think it's channeling it, isn't it? I think actually it's all right at times to be a bit of a madam. I think it's how ultimately, if intrinsically you're a nice person and you treat others the way you want to be treated, I think it's all okay. I think it's when you're not particularly nice with it and can be damaging. And I think it's about working with young people, my children included, to help them to see actually you might feel like this and it's okay to feel like that, but actually that's not the best way of going about it. And directors and people don't want to work with people who are diva like or any of that kind of behavior. So it's about making sure people are really grounded, I think, and down to earth, and working with them to make them see that that's actually the best way to be.
Because you are in charge of a lot of children and young adults.
Yes,
a lot of people. So apart from what we've just talked about, if you spotted someone was being diva-like, have you got a kind of almost like your own framework for how you want people to be brought up?
Yeah, we have the Elmhurst Way, which is the school philosophy, which I introduced in 2010, which is basically, it's based on the fish philosophy, which was developed in a fish market in Seattle, which sounds really bizarre. But essentially what happened, it's called Pike's Pier, and there's a fish market in Seattle, which is really famous, where the workers were really fed up with their working conditions. And so they came together through the unions to say, look, it's a horrible, wet, smelly, fishy, horrible situation that we're in. We need to do something about it. And they came up with this fish philosophy, which is choose the right attitude, make someone's day, have fun and be there. And so we've kind of at Elmhurst adopted that philosophy, which is a really straightforward, positive philosophy, which is basically underpinned by my core values, which is treat people how you want to be treated. You can't really go wrong. And so it's about being positive. And if you've had a really rubbish morning before you get to school, if you're a teacher, or if you've had a really, you know, fallen out with your parents overnight, if you're in boarding, then actually every day is a fresh day. Come to school with the right attitude and start again. So that's the framework that we work with, and it does work really well.
And so the children that are at Elmhurst who board, so they've got, it's not just a team of teachers, is it? It's a team of...
it's a big staff. We've got 130 staff, I think, on payroll, and that's really various. We have pianists, we have health and wellbeing staff, so we have physiotherapy, we have GP services, teachers, academic and ballet and contemporary and jazz, and then we've got all our facilities and catering and cleaning. So it's a big operation. It's the same size kind of staffing that you'd have for a much bigger school, but because the students have such specialist kind of needs in a way in terms of nurturing their talent and individuality, it's making sure that we have the right support in place to do that.
How does it work in terms of the dance side and the kind of more, I guess,
like academic
pen and paper side? How do you sort out like the weighting for those both?
Yeah, so essentially it varies from years depending on what age and stage you are, but key stage three, so from 11 to kind of 14, students have 50% of their time is spent on doing the dancing and 50% is spent on their academic curriculum. And then in GCSE years, there's like one or two lessons that have to come across to the academic side because we wouldn't fulfill the criteria for GCSEs. And we obviously want to make sure that we're producing thinking dancers because thinking dancers are best dancers. So it's then in the A level. So when we go into the sixth form, it shifts completely and we have a 3-year sixth form program. So the first 2 years, students do 2 A levels and they do a level 6 diploma. So they do 10 hours of classroom based study for their A level program. And then the 27 hours is dancing really. And then in the final year, which is the third year of sixth form, we have Elmhurst Ballet Company, which is pure dance, and then they do a dissertation to finalize their level 6 diploma. So that's how it's kind of worked out.
So when you were growing up, would you describe yourself as a thinking dancer?
I guess I would, you know, and I think that's why somebody like Wayne McGregor inspired me so much, because as I said, he's just a genius, and I've observed him in his creative process preparing to present and create work, and the way that he immersed himself in science, in art, in literature, in the world, to come to the culmination of creating a piece of choreography is just fascinating and clever. And I think my parents as well, so sort of his influence, they're my parents basically said to me, Jessica, if you want to dance, you have to study. You can't drop your studies to dance. And I will never be more grateful to them for that, because so many of my peers at that point just were like, oh, I'm not going to do my A-levels, I'm not going to do the degree course, I'll do the diploma. And actually, whatever we think about qualifications and education does open doors and opportunities. And without having my A-levels and my degree, I wouldn't have been able to do my national professional qualification for headship, and I wouldn't be able to do what I do today. So I feel very, very fortunate I had those influences in my life that were very persistent influences, because believe you me, I'd have been the first to drop my academics because I was so in love with dance, but actually it wasn't the right thing for me.
Well, it must have been very powerful at the time, having role models, and having role models in your parents who were saying, no, look, this other side is really important too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very lucky.
It's definitely one thing to be good at dance and to kind of see it as the overall thing that means you can drop everything else. And it's another thing, like quite a mature thing, I think, especially for a young girl to be like, this isn't the only thing that I might want to do when I grow up. Yeah. I need a kind of, it's not even a backup option, is it? It's something that adds to it.
Exactly. It's complementary. And although, yes, sometimes we do talk about it as a plan B, C or D, it's actually not that. If you look at the very best sports people in this world, if you look at the very best kind of choreographers and things, they are people who are interested in the world, in what goes on in the world, and in things that sit beyond their immediate subject matter. And I think that's really important for us to learn, is that actually we shouldn't be so blinkered in, you know, yes, we might be completely in love with ballet, but actually to be a great ballet dancer, you also need to know about the fact, if you're dancing Romeo and Juliet, what's the context of that? Or it's about kind of the wider world, really.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's been absolutely fascinating hearing about your journey. And then if people want to find out more about you and Elmhurst and the work that you're doing, they can visit
www.elmhurstdance.co.uk. Then you'll find out all about the school.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by Clever Tykes Children's Storybooks. If you want to support the podcast and help share our ethos of inspiring, enterprising behaviour, head over to clevertykes.com and order a set of the storybooks to give to a child that you know.